try and sell you, 'cause it hangs them up to see someone like you. But you gotta make your own kind of music. Sing.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. If you're looking for a place to find your local community news, you can need to go no further than the Civic Media Daily News podcast. Again, from sports and entertainment to weather to your state and local community news, Civic Media's Daily News Roundup podcast gives you what you need to know in your community. Again, from Racine to Hayward, we've got you covered. Just head over to your local Civic Media station website. For me, that would be waukradio.com for Waukesha, and find the banner at the top of the page. And you can click to hear your Civic Media Local News Roundup podcast. But really excited to talk about the news with my next guest, former congressional candidate, small business owner, Navy veteran, Tom Paulswitz. Welcome back, Tom.
I'm glad to be here, Maggie. I'm still smiling from that song. I mean, what an uplifting, fun song. Thanks, Calvin. I really dig that one. That was awesome.
Yeah, we try to keep the music poignant yet uplifting when we can.
Yeah.
We were talking just over the break about Leonard Leo and the fact that in many ways, you know, this is a name that I think 9 out of 10 Americans would be like, who are you talking about? Right. And yet he wields this enormous influence over the rights that you and I enjoy on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's very interesting that, you know, no matter how many times throughout our history of mankind, so to speak, is there's always these people who want to put their thumb on the scale and have it be their way. And it's usually because they have the resources to be able to do it. And no matter how much we try to create an environment where everybody has a say, there's always going to be a few people who want to use their power and their money to basically shape society the way they think it should be. And it's just fundamentally wrong, but it just keeps happening over and over and over again. We joked like this was a, you know, are we back to a monarchy because one person gets to decide what we're doing from a judicial standpoint? It just, it's fundamentally, it shouldn't happen, but that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's a name that I wish more people were familiar of, as well as the, frankly, the influence that has been wielded. He, again, as I mentioned before, we went to top of the hour news, weather and sports. He handpicked largely the 6 ultra conservatives that currently make up the unmovable voting block on the Supreme Court. We're getting a little bit of news help from one of my friends here, a listener in Waukesha. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for the text. The Brewers just trounced the Pittsburgh Pirates 10-2.
Nice.
Hit 5 home runs. Thanks, Greg, for the update. Love me a little baseball wonk and baseball updates when we're on the air. That's the good stuff right there.
Yeah, the only reason I knew there was a game going on this afternoon is because of traffic on 94.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But nothing compares to the traffic that you would see in Chicago when there is a Cubs game. Basically, abandon all agendas for the day is yet another reason why I love Milwaukee and would always live here if given the choice between Milwaukee and Chicago.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit about money in politics, because I was totally blown away by the completely explicit quid pro quo that Donald Trump just pitched to oil executives, reported for the first time this week by the Washington Post. This is reporting on a meeting that Donald Trump took with some of the country's top oil executives at Mar-a-Lago last month. Basically, Trump stunned, this is according to the Washington Post, stunned several of the executives in the room when he said, "You're all wealthy enough. You should raise $1 billion to return me to the White House. And if you do that, I will immediately reverse a whole gamut of President Biden's environmental rules and policies, stop new ones from being enacted." Who was in the room at the time? 2 dozen executives, included Mike Sabol, CEO and founder of Venture Global, Jack Fusco, CEO of Chenery Energy, as well as executives from Chevron, Continental Resources, Exxon, and Occidental Petroleum. It's basically the big hitters of the oil industry. I guess I have to stop saying I'm surprised by this, but I guess I still am a little surprised. The complete, total pay to play. I mean, that's what this is. This should be illegal, don't you think, Tom?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, what's happening in college sports today is they've taken what were under the table payments and brought them to the surface. And I think, you know, there are some people who love Donald Trump and say it's because he's so honest. And it's really he doesn't let norms hold him back.
Right.
And he's just saying the quiet part out loud, you know, because I've been thinking about this story and I'm like, boy, it was hard to think that you could get anything worse than the cigarette industry. And then along came the gun industry. And now here comes the energy industry, who's willing to actually torpedo the entire planet to continue their profit making. And, yeah. And you know, if it weren't so absurd, you know, it would be funny, but it's tragic. It's tragic that these people get to be in a room with somebody who could be president, but two, that they could have this influence. And I'm sure they left going, that's all it's going to take. We'd be happy to give you $1 billion.
One thing that I agreed with Donald Trump, at least according to reporting from, again, the Washington Post about this meeting, is that he told the oil executives that this would be a great deal for them.
Right, because it is. Yes.
Like just $1 billion.
Right.
I mean, that is bargain basement pricing to roll back what are arguably existentially necessary environmental rules and regulations. And just as a point of fact, the United States now produces more oil than any country ever has.
Yep.
Okay, I'm just going to say more oil than any country ever has. Pumping nearly 13 billions per day on average last year. ExxonMobil and Chevron, two of the executives in that meeting, they are the largest U.S. energy companies. By the way, they're not hurting. They reported their biggest annual profits in a decade in 2023. Yes. So yeah, $1 billion, super cheap.
Right, and actually he's just asking them to return like 1/6 of the annual subsidies that we give these companies to begin with, right? It's like, oh, you're going to give me $5 billion and I get to not have any regulations? This is fantastic.
Perfect.
You know,
I mean, I missed the boat. I often joke, if I would have known how hard lawyering is, I would have become a cosmetic dentist that took no insurance and, you know, golfed on Fridays. But no, that would have been wrong, too. I should have become an oil executive.
Yes.
Because, as you say, subsidies, promises to deregulate and just rake in billions hand over fist. Pretty good business to be in.
Yeah. And the sad fact that this conversation was had should be something that disturbs the rest of us, all of us, to be able to say, wait a minute, there's something completely wrong with what's happening here. But the interesting thing is the reporters, most reporters went shrug. Here's another story. It's just something. And this, you know, to me is possibly the most catastrophic outcome of the election potentially.
Yeah, when you put, I agree with you, Tom. As a lawyer, of course, my brain tends to go towards the Supreme Court and the federal courts, which we just talked about. But I view this sort of on equal footing, and that there is a through line here. In other words, what I see in the federal courts is increasing cruelty, the reduction of freedoms and rights for historically disadvantaged groups, an erosion of the consistency that we should expect, the evolution, not the regression, of rights and freedoms, greater protections. In other words, a more just and verdant society for all. I see that in the federal courts. And meanwhile, yes, the greatest existential threat to humankind, yes, the environment. Oh, over here on the other side, Donald Trump's promising to just give away the entire regulatory system in exchange for the reins of power. Wow.
Right. Yes. Shocking. But but like you said, not outside the norms of what's currently happening.
Yeah. It's just disgusting. A couple more facts here. And again, I think people across the ideological spectrum, whether you agree we've got enough regulation or whatever it is, Republican or Democratic, what we should be able to agree on is that it's not okay for a candidate to sell policies to the highest corporate bidder. It's that part of it. Forget the particular context, though I think it's existential, as we've been talking about, and really disturbing. To me, can't we say as Americans, like, that's not okay, that should be objectively wrong?
But theoretically, but here's the thing. Most people believe that all the politicians are corrupt to begin with, and therefore this is just business as usual. And therefore that just because they're talking about it openly, we shouldn't be shocked at the fact they're talking about it openly. And I think that's the starting point, is this idea that there's this high level of corruption everywhere and that you can't trust any politician. But most people I know, who, especially local government, state government, their hearts are in the right place and they want to make sure they're getting things done. And they're generally good people. But when you have a grifter like Donald Trump come along, you have to take a step back and go, wait a minute, why are there so many people following that mindset or just excusing it because they think both sides do it?
It's interesting that you bring this up, Tom, because I spent the entirety of the first hour of my show yesterday talking about the essential building blocks for good elected officials, and that one of them has to be, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or you run unaffiliated or Green Party or whatever it is, that they abide by a certain set of ethical norms, not just the rules, but both the letter and the spirit of those rules. And certainly something like this is simply beyond the pale by any measure. And I totally agree with you that this debasement of the process and the approach by Donald Trump and many of the MAGA party today has created this sense of false equivalency across all elected officials when that's simply not true. It doesn't take many bad apples to convince everyone that the entire bushel is rotten, but that is simply not the case. These are not all politicians lie. No, that's not true. Some politicians may fail to accomplish what they may promise in a campaign. That's not the same as an outright lie. Donald Trump lies, and we have to be able to hold our elected officials to a higher standard than that. It shouldn't be okay, like, oh, they all do it. No, they don't.
One more quick thing, please, before we go into break. I think it's important to understand, at least the way I've been thinking about it, is you can't have authoritarianism without corruption.
Well, the two things facilitate each other. Yes.
Yep.
That is a feedback loop that all of history teaches us. One need look no further than Vladimir Putin for proof of that concept. My guest this half hour, former congressional candidate, Navy veteran, small business owner, Tom Paulsowitz, my friend and yours. Stay put, everybody. We'll be back with you in just a moment. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Happy Wednesday. Brewers chalking up a big W. The sun is shining. I hope you're having a great day. My guest this half hour is former congressional candidate, Navy veteran, small business owner, my friend and yours, Tom Paulsowitz, a reasonable man if there ever was one. Welcome back, Tom. So happy to have you. We're talking a bit about money and politics. And of course, again, we talked about Donald Trump's quid pro quo, which should be clearly illegal, promising oil executives that he'll roll back all sorts of environmental regulations if they just would give him the bargain basement price of $1 billion to help him get reelected. Right. Now, the factual predicate for that, the reason that this meeting happened when it did, is oil billionaire Harold Hamm and others are scheduling a big fundraiser for Trump. So this meeting was kind of a setup for that. And to date, oil donors and their allies have not donated that much to Donald Trump. Sort of conventional wisdom is that they were hoping for a DeSantis candidacy. They've only contributed about $6.4 million to Trump's Joint Financing Committee, which in terms of presidential donations is basically like tossing a nickel into a fountain and making a wish. So that's why the meeting, it's very clear what's going on here. The other bit of news that really freaked me out this week was the breaking news that it looks like Paul Manafort is trying to jockey to get hired back into the Trump campaign. Of course, this is a guy who went to federal prison, was supposed to be there for nearly 7 years for money laundering and obstruction of justice. But of course, you know, Trump pardoned him, so he got right back out. Now, the scary thing, and by the way, those charges related to Manafort's work for Russia-aligned former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. I mean, it all ties back together. Here we are, you know, having to spend billions to try to push back the Russian advances in Ukraine because Mike Johnson dragged his feet for 8 months because Trump told him to. An absolutely despicable type of crime by Paul Manafort. So the very idea that this guy who basically peddled his influence to help enemies of the United States for money, that he would now be involved yet again after being convicted of very serious federal crimes in the Trump campaign is appalling to me. How bad do you think this is, Tom?
Oh, to have him anywhere near our political sphere is absolutely dangerous, you know, and this is, you know, this is a lot like, you know, reading about what's going on right now at Trump's trial is, you know, you're having witnesses having to wear bulletproof vests coming and going from the courthouse. And it, you know, every time I read a story like that, they always refer to like the only other time this happens is during some kind of
mob trial.
Exactly. A mob trial. It's like, boy, my goodness, you know, but here's the thing. I'm going to go back to the corruption idea for a minute. And this is why corruption is so dangerous, because it does erode the confidence in government. And that's why so authoritarians like to use corruption, because they can point to the fact that there are also other corrupt politicians in other places. So therefore, it must be going on everywhere. And because it's going on everywhere, I'm going to be above board with my corruption. And I'm going to show you exactly what I'm doing. You know, I think going back to the oil executives, I think there's a pause there, because Trump's, you know, he's the kind of person that doesn't stay bought. You know, even if they give him $1 billion, they don't know exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, what's the value? What's the value proposition? Is he actually going to follow through, right?
Exactly. But back to Paul Manafort, I mean, you know, having Paul Manafort be involved in any way, shape, or form with a campaign should make people wonder and take a step back. You know, and if this was any other campaign or any other candidate or anything else, to, you know, to have a convicted, like you said, convicted money launderer, who has ties to a whole bunch of very shady characters anywhere near an election or a campaign, that candidate would have to immediately fire them and be embarrassed and maybe even drop out of the race. So, but that's not the world we live in right now.
Yeah, it's just stunning to me. According to insiders, again, this was reporting by the Washington Post, Trump is pretty determined to hire Manafort, though others are a bit concerned about what that might portend for Trump's campaign, not because of Manafort's corruption or influence peddling with enemies of the United States, but because Manafort has been advising this Chinese media company, and that doesn't quite square up with Trump's anti-China rhetoric. Like, that's the worry. It's not, no, we're not actually worried about the corruption. Right. We're just worried that he might look bad for the campaign.
Exactly. And I think the hard part is for most people to say, well, what does this have to do with anything? What it has to do with anything is when you look at any election, be it a federal level, state level, local level election, are you looking at the character of the people? And are you getting some kind of verification that this person has some kind of value structure that matches up with society's value structure and is willing to apply that to situations that we don't know what's going to happen? And I think that's the real challenge when it comes to this, because when you paint the picture that everyone's corrupt and everybody does it and everyone's, you know, somehow underhanded or bad, it decreases the faith that why should I even go vote? Why should I bother to pick when there's not a good place? And there's a tremendous amount of really smart, really good people out there running, especially in the state of Wisconsin. I'm very excited about these elections this fall, because I think there are going to be actual elections and there'll be debates and they'll be deciding policy, not all this other stuff that we're going through right now.
Yeah. Kristen Lierley, Peter Barca as candidates, those two people put those congressional districts in play. And the reason that they do is because, like you, Tom, they are reasonable people who want to get things done, that I think are trying to express the values of Wisconsinites, the values of their constituents. Tom, can you stick around for another little bit of chit-chat?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. My guest this half hour, and for a little bit extra, is former congressional candidate, small business owner, and Navy veteran Tom Paulsiewicz. We've been talking about money and politics. Some of the corruption that we see, our major point this hour, is it's not all politicians. It's not the way that all politics work. And it's time that we ask better for each and every one of us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. One of the things that I was really concerned about, Tom, reading about Manafort's likely work again for the Trump campaign is, one, he again offered to do it for free, which is interesting to me. Trump wants to hire him because he considers him to be a loyalist, like the guy went to prison for me. In other words, he'll do anything I ask. But in addition to those two factors, one of the things that was really disturbing to me in reading about this was that Manafort basically lied to reporters when they asked him about his work for this Chinese media venture. We'll talk a little bit more of that when we come back. We might even listen to a little crazy Paul Manafort sound. We might even get to Steve Bannon. So don't go anywhere. Everybody, your farm update is next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Letting everybody jam out a little extra here on Wednesday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. I'm joined this hour by my friend and yours, Tom Paulsiewicz, talking about money and politics, corruption, all that good stuff. Specifically, we've been talking about Paul Manafort and reporting just this past week that he is likely going to join Trump's reelection campaign team. And frankly, the out-and-out prospects for pay-to-play, bribery, and all the rest of it that Manafort's very presence brings to the fore, as if it wasn't bad enough that Donald Trump's willing to trade his entire environmental policy agenda to the oil executives for, you know, a mere $1 billion. Well, let's bring Paul Manafort in. I'm sure that'll bring everything back above board. Let's take a listen. This is Paul Manafort back in August 2022 on Newsmax's On Balance with Leland Vittert. Let's take a listen.
Let me ask it this way. Is there anything that you know about President Trump and his behavior, either during the campaign or as president, that's enough to get him? Is anybody going to ever get him?
Well, I've never seen anything. All of these.
So there's no secrets that you still hold of his?
The secrets that I still hold, there was nothing illegal that was going on.
And, but they're still secrets.
Well, I mean, they're not public, but there's nothing, there's no behavior that is putting him in harm's way. What puts him in harm's way is his willingness to carry the torch to drain the swamp. And as long as he does that, he's going to be in the crosshairs. And that's what you see today.
Okay. First of all, I love the tacit admission that there are secrets. And like, if there was nothing illegal and it's so unproblematic, why not just spill the dirt? But the very idea that dear Mr. Manafort, what does draining the swamp mean to you? It would mean to me that politicians and our policies aren't for sale to the highest Russian aligned backer, that aren't for sale to the oil industry. That's what draining the swamp means to me. What do you say, Tom?
Oh, it definitely, but it also means strengthening the civil service and creating basically a group of people who are committed to their areas to make them more efficient and more effective that are removed or insulated from politics. And Donald Trump is recommending that the country goes in the opposite direction. So basically he wants to unwind everything that Teddy Roosevelt did in order to protect and create a civil service group and basically put people who are loyal to him in. And that's how he wants to run things because that's how he's used to running things. So, because I ran into this in my first campaign when I met people and they talked about they wanted somebody to drain the swamp. And I would point out all the things that Donald Trump was already doing that was corrupt. And they said, well, at least he'll know where to look because he's got experience in that level of corruption. And it's like they were also people who said, like, well, we got to try something because it's so bad. And I think that's a direct knock against the, you know, tens of thousands of government workers who show up every day to do their job and do it to the best of their abilities. And it's unfair, you know, to how many different Americans who are really trying to make a difference that you're calling them the swamp.
Well, and there's this sort of internal inconsistency that is baked into this drain the swamp cake. It's like, well, listen, you don't make government more responsive, more objective, more efficient, more transparent by injecting more political loyalty litmus tests in who works in government. It's like, oh, you want to drain the swamp because it just perpetuates the particular partisan leanings of people that work in government. Oh, I know how to do that. I'll do that by making everyone in government affiliated and loyal to a particular partisan interest. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense when you break it down to its most basic. Certainly makes for a fun thing to chant at a cult type rally, though.
Exactly. But it's not even logical. And I think the challenge is the mechanisms that we use to hold people accountable. Like there are two Democrats that are being held accountable right now for corruption, which they should
be.
Yep. And that's what should happen to politicians who cross over the line and start doing things illegally, is there are plenty of ways to hold them accountable, but to imply that everyone's corrupt and no one's watching, it's just not right. And it's not fair to the hardworking people who are doing what they need to do to make government work.
And there's far more of them, right, than there are of the corrupt people. And I think the misapprehension that if you work in government, you're bought and paid for somehow is just a grossly incorrect perception. A small story, if you will permit. Back when I was working for the city of Milwaukee, I was at Panera to get bagels and coffee and pastries for a whole bunch of people that I was working with on a particular project. We had an early morning meeting, and I was a little late. I still run on lawyer time. I still think of things as I'm billing in the 10th of an hour, and you don't waste time waiting around. So you tend to be a little tardy for things. So I was a little late, a little pressed for time. Nice older gentleman in front of me said, "Miss, you look to be in a hurry. Would you like to go ahead of me?" I said, "Well, thank you so very much. How kind." And as I was gathering up this massive amount of coffee and bagels and pastry, he asked me, "Oh, where you work? Where are you getting all this stuff for?" And I said, "Oh, I work for the city of Milwaukee." And his face, it was like a dark cloud came over it. And he said, "Oh, well, then you should wait, you people in government." And I took a beat and a breath. And I said to him, "I understand why you're frustrated. And I'm sorry that you are. But just, my name's Maggie Dawn. You can look me up at the city. Here's my card. Call me anytime you'd like. My experience is that people in government work really hard every day for you. I hope I can change your opinion someday." And he just kind of looked at me like, "You're an alien." I bet, you know what I mean? Like that he had never had that kind of interaction. He never called me, but I made sure he had my card and like, "Hey, awesome. I'm a flesh and blood person and we're here right. And we're actually here to serve."
Yep. And that to me is the hardest part about when people say they want a change in government. What they're really saying is they want government to work.
Yes.
They want to get more bang for their buck. They want their tax dollars to get stretched so that they can pay less for better or more services. And you know, frankly, in most governments, that isn't the mentality. They're not trying to do that. There's a lot of hardworking people, and the more nonpartisan the office is, the higher probability of that happening. But we should be protecting the mechanics of government from politicians. Somebody asked me the other day, like, what's the biggest thing you learned by running for office? And I said, the biggest thing I learned is there's two parts to it. One is there's a lot of political theater.
Yeah.
And political theater is meant to raise money, because it's hard to raise money unless you create angry feelings. And when you create angry feelings, people want them solved, and they're willing to give money. And then the second is there's a lot of hardworking people who care, but they usually aren't seen because the political theater or the political performances outshine the rest.
So true. I think one of the things that I struggle with just on a day-to-day basis on the show is a small microcosm or reflection of that. It's, we want to entertain and provoke and keep folks engaged, but I don't just want to stoke sort of a rage machine,
right?
You know, and yet there's a lot to be upset about, right?
Yes.
And so how do we thread this needle to very, I think, humanly say, yep, we can do better, but let's not, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
Yes.
And again, I've been accused of being right. I've been accused of being a far lefty at various points in my career, because fundamentally, I don't believe that most local government has any partisan lean at all. It just has nothing to do with it at all. It's
right.
Silly.
Yep.
I don't believe most state government has much of a partisan lean, or it shouldn't at its best, because that's not what has what really impacts the quality of everybody's day-to-day life. But the theater that needs to be created in order to run campaigns
right.
is almost runs to a contrary purpose. It makes it much harder for government to function and to actually serve the public that every elected official swears an oath to serve. It's a frustrating dynamic.
Yeah, and you and I have had this conversation. There's a big difference between running for an executive office and running for a legislative office. And if you have somebody running for an executive position, to me, the number one thing you want to know is, are they competent and do they know how to run a large organization? And if you're electing a legislature, you want them to make as much noise as possible in order to make the changes that need to get made to those organizations or that executive part. And the problem is we have people who are using political theater to run the executive elections, and it really shouldn't happen that way, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's, again, funny that you mentioned this, because part of what I talked about yesterday, and folks, if you missed the show, not to worry, you can go to civicmedia.us, where we have all of the Maggie Dawn Show past episodes there for your listening pleasure. But part of what I talked about in that is one of the essential ingredients for an elected official to be successful, to be effective, isn't a set of partisan tick list positions. It's, do you actually understand the concept of separation of powers, what the different functions of an executive versus a legislative branch are, and almost as importantly, where do you work in the local, state, federal government ecosystem? In other words, what, you know, I continue to be exasperated beyond any measure when I see local village boards or, you know, county boards with certain people on them that will remain nameless. No, I'm talking about former Supervisor Ryan Clancy, who adopt resolutions about U.S. foreign policy. That's not the business of Milwaukee County. And it injects partisanship and division into what is nonpartisan, very basic local governmental delivery of services.
Yep, exactly. And it is those delivery of services. And, you know, when I look at an executive election, the first question I'm asking is, will this person surround themselves with high quality people who are competent and know how to get things done?
Yeah.
And I can say for certain that Joe Biden is that kind of person, because all you have to do is look at his cabinet and it's filled with people who know what they're doing.
Yeah,
and when you look at Donald Trump, I don't know if he knows how to hire people to do all those other pieces, because he runs a very small business. It just happens to deal with a lot of money.
Yeah, it's real estate and development, which is by definition a high dollar business. But the number of people he has employed is very, very small. It's insular. And he basically picks them based on personal loyalty. I've never met an extraordinarily successful CEO or executive of any stripe that makes decisions based on an individual's personal loyalty to them. In fact, it's often the opposite. The most successful executives are people that actually welcome folks that challenge their ideas, that say, is that really the best way to do things? And that have the thicker skin to be able to have those sorts of conversations without Yes. personalizing it.
Exactly. Yeah. And just having people who are willing, you know, I think having people who surround you who are willing to go to jail to protect you from going to jail shouldn't be a badge of honor to be able to say that shows your leadership. So
yeah, that's not good. Right? It's not what we should be going for right. at all. Listen, Tom, it's always great to talk with you. You're going to find Tom Paulswitz every 3 weeks here on the Maggie Dawn Show. He's a former congressman, former Navy man, and a good friend of the show. Just want to give you a little shout out, Tom. Jeff from Shorewood, regular caller, texter, and listener, says, tell Tom ET2 Purnell, USN 8084, would vote for him if he were in my district in Shorewood. So a big shout out from Jeff in Shorewood.
Nice. He's an ET, though. I was an EM, so I'm not sure I could accept that. So
then you can't take that endorsement quite yet. Thanks right. so much, Jeff. Keep listening. Thank you, Tom, for being here with the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon.
My pleasure.
We're going to have to leave it there. You can find Tom again in just a few weeks back here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and I've got some positive things from the news for you after we come back after these brief messages. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. I was talking this past hour with Tom Paulswitz about corruption and government and about how do we really root that out and solve the problem. We'll continue that conversation next week on the Maggie Dawn Show. I've got to take a couple of days off. I'm going to be speechifying tomorrow, talking about racial justice and how do we create equality, true equality and equity of opportunity in this country, something that I think we all believe in. Wanted to end today on a positive up note. If you don't know who Vel Phillips is, I'm here to share a little bit of that information with you. After years of fundraising, a statue of Vel R. Phillips is finally going to be placed in the rotunda at the Wisconsin Capitol. It's an incredible accomplishment, and I wanted to share with you a little bit about who Vel is so that we can all celebrate this together. She certainly is an exemplar of people that served the public, that were elected officials and worked in government, and did so, again, truly from a servant leader perspective, not for themselves or their own personal aggrandizement, but truly to serve others. Vel Hortense Rogers Phillips is known as one of the most iconic civil rights advocates in Wisconsin history. She walked and marched with Father Grappi in the NAACP Youth Council in the decades-long fight against discrimination and housing in Milwaukee, a fight that continues to this day. She was arrested, in fact, when police cracked down on some of those nonviolent demonstrations. And it can be said at a high level that her work, both legislatively and as a lawyer, significantly advanced the cause for racial and social justice here in Wisconsin. And she continued to do so until her death in 2018. Here's some facts about Miss Vel R. Phillips. In 1951, she became the first Black woman to graduate from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School, my alma mater. Go Badgers! She and her husband, Dale Phillips, became the first husband and wife legal team admitted to the federal bar in Wisconsin, which I think is just so cool. In 1956, when Ms. Phillips was 5 months pregnant, she became the first woman and the first Black member of the Common Council. I mean, imagine that. Not just the first woman, the first Black woman, and you're 5 months pregnant when you get sworn in. In 1958, she was the first Black woman elected to the Democratic National Committee. Phillips then went on to become the first Black woman to become a judge in the state of Wisconsin. And in 1978, she was the first Black person to win statewide office in Wisconsin. And with that election, she became the first Black woman to be elected to statewide elective office in any state, which is truly, truly remarkable. She will now, with the installation of her statue, be the first Black woman politician, jurist, and civil rights leader represented on any U.S. state capitol grounds in the country. Her statue is going to be placed on the South Hamilton corner of the Capitol grounds. In case you are from Madison, what's up, WMDX? It was just last month, about a month ago, that it was announced that after a $500,000 campaign, we finally have enough money to build the statue, and that the State Capitol and Executive Residence Board had granted final approval for the installation of a sculpture honoring the life and legacy of Vel R. Phillips. There are other memorials to Miss Phillips in Milwaukee. North 4th Street has been named in her honor, and there is soon going to be also a plaza that will be named after Miss Phillips in Milwaukee, just south of the Baird Center. Madison has a residence hall named after her, and James Madison Memorial High School in Madison also was renamed after Miss Phillips. An interesting point of fact, of course, there are not a lot of statues in state capitals or government buildings that actually represent real women in this country. There's just not a lot of them. Think about it. You see a lot of Lady Justice, that kind of thing. Of course, those are just allegories. They're not real women. According to research by Sierra Rooney, an assistant professor of art history at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, only about 6% of all public monuments are of actual women from history. Yikes. In fact, according to one 2021 survey, there are more statues of mermaids than actual historical women. Well, isn't that nice for the ladies? This is a big deal, not just because Miss Phillips is such an icon and so important to Wisconsin's history, not just because of the incredible body of her life's work, but because this also received just overwhelming bipartisan support in Madison. Interesting to note, when the board voted to approve the installation of the statue, they also agreed to grant a one-time exception to its rule barring the addition of any monuments on the Capitol grounds without the removal of an existing one, which makes this sort of interesting because now Miss Phillips can claim yet another first, the first woman from the grave to get Wisconsin politicians to unanimously agree to, you know, something these days. Most importantly, and appropriate, and I think timely, given that I'm going to be talking about racial justice and representation tomorrow in a speech in Texas, this drives home the point that representation truly, truly does matter. This was a civil servant who overcame enormous obstacles, and it sends such a strong message to women and girls, as well as Black and brown women and girls, that they too can succeed to the highest levels of government. So let's all applaud Miss Vel R. Phillips for her service, and finally, a well-deserved memorial at our state capitol. That's going to do it for me this week. You're going to have Jim Santel as a guest host tomorrow for the Maggie Donchamp Show. My thanks to Jim. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But remember, it is always better when we stand together. I'm telling these tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flame.